carried
right.
it first.
Yes.
So do you want to sit here, or shall I sit up there next to you?
Whatever you're comfortable. I'm comfortable right here.
Okay, then I'm going to sit next to you. Because you're like,
yeah, sit down up there.
Okay. I think I sat on this very spot with Captain Bruce in Australia.
Oh, Captain Bruce.
That's how I remember you.
Oh, were you on the boat in Coffs Harbor?
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you looked familiar.
Yeah,
okay. I came on and I interviewed Bruce and I interviewed Kaleo.
Yeah. Me and Bruce, we always like, hey, how come you didn't pick this guy? Now can I pick him for the next leg?
Yeah, Captain Rivals.
Yeah.
So let's start at the starting point. Do you want to tell me your name?
Yeah, it's Chad Kalepa Baybayan, Baybayan. Kalepa is spelled Kalepaan, and Chad, Chad. I grew up in Lahaina, Maui, in the Hawaiian Islands. I currently reside in Kona on the Big Island. I work for the University of Hawaii. At the Imiloa Astronomy Center. I'm their navigator in residence. I've been reassigned by the university to help out with the Malamahonua project for the next, at least another year and a half.
Fantastic. But how long does your relationship with Mokulea go? How long?
Oh, I first sailed on her in 1975 when she made her first maiden voyage to Maui. Sailed up to my island and I got on board. So, I don't know, 1975 to, 2016, 2015? Yeah. What's that, 10, 20, 30, 40, 40, 41 years.
It's a long time to be sailing this big canoe.
Yeah. So lucky. Very fortunate.
You must feel like, you must have done a lot besides just, have you done a lot in terms of construction?
Well, I worked on not the building of this canoe. I worked on other canoes, the building of it. I've done a lot of dry docking episodes. I mean, from the grunt level, pulling on ropes, sanding stuff, and just working my way up the ladder. But I'm not an actual builder, but I know how to build canoes. I know who I need. I know who has the skill sets in the state of Hawaii. I know how to ask people. I know how to build partnerships with all the different individuals so that they feel like they're contributing to something worthwhile. And that's probably what I do best, is just making people want to collaborate.
That's the job of a captain, huh?
Yeah, that's kind of what one of the skill sets you need to do is get people to understand the mission and then get them to rally around the mission and then get them to deliver on executing and fulfilling that mission.
And so, out of the Malamahonua voyage, I should put some words in your mouth, actually. So, tell me what the name of this voyage is, and like, what's the mission of this voyage?
Well, Malamahonua means caring for the planet. Yeah, Honua being the planet, and Malama, in a very broad sense, means to take care of, to share, to collaborate. So, the project is about collecting stories of different groups doing good work at stewarding the planet, posting it on our website. That's one thing. Another effort is education, raising awareness about the state of the world's oceans. World's oceans is the largest incubator for oxygen and the largest regulator for climate. And we are not, as a human population, not pointing fingers at any one nation, we're not doing that good a job of taking care of the world's oceans. So the world's oceans takes up about 2/3 of the planet's global mass. And so, like I said, it's so critical to regulating climate change and processing oxygen that if you take a deep breath today, 50 years from now, if we keep on going this on this path, we're not going to be able to take in the same amount of oxygen. So, our state isn't hopeless, you know. It's about raising it's a campaign of awareness. But again, just going around and looking at groups in the organization. And we're not about telling people what they need to be doing. Rather, we're about learning from communities about their efforts and then just in the very end, with this collection of stories, we'll just have a network of like-minded organizations that we can feature on our website. And then the third thing is learning about indigenous cultures, peoples of the place, and celebrating their heritage and collecting those stories as well. And a fourth thing is, again, this is a traditional canoe. We could be sailing on a monohull sailboat, but we're not. We're sailing on a double-hulled voyaging canoe. And we practice our non-instrument navigation whenever it's practical. We always are looking to build capacity by training new people, sharing the legacy of non-instrument navigation and the whole legacy of voyaging and exploration that embodies the spirit of the oceanic people who settled the Pacific. And it's just our commitment to keep on getting people to be inspired by the fact that they're descended from the world's greatest voyagers and navigators.
And so how do you feel about arriving in the Virgin Islands? Is there anything in particular that you want to share with the Virgin Islands?
We'd like to share our story, but we also like to learn about the St. John's community, learn what the people here are about, things they value, things they cherish, and just get to learn this community so that, like I said, this community is new to the voyaging canoe. Hopefully by the time we leave next Friday, we'll feel a kinship with the people here in St. John's.
And so tell me about the voyage that you just did.
From Natal to Natal, Brazil to St. John's, it was pretty much a textbook sail because the first 48 hours the winds were light. And so we had to motor. We kept on egging to cut the tow rope. We did a few times, and then the wind petered out. And then we were reminded that we needed to maintain 6 knots. So we had to take up the tow. But once we got into the wind, we started to sail. And this canoe's fast, super fast. You know, she just outruns the escort boat, so we were constantly having to close our sails and wait for them to catch up. But
how fast do you go?
Oh, shucks. We were doing 10 knots. Yeah, we were doing 10 knots on a cruise, on a dime. And that's without all our sails open, too. But we like to cruise at about 8 knots. We're super fast. But it was a textbook sail. And I say textbook because the winds was off our starboard quarter, stern quarter. Although we practiced navigation, we knew the land was all around us. You know, the South American continent was off our port side, and the Caribbean was ahead of on the bow. You know, it just basically sailed northwest. We didn't have good celestial clues to guide us, guys, because it was overcast. But the wind was consistent, and the ocean swell was from the same direction as the wind, so we could steer off of that and home in pretty accurately. Where we were, where the islands were. So we attempted to find Barbados, and we did find it. It was found it at night, and then once we found Barbados, then the rest is pretty basic. We knew where all the islands were, and so it's a matter. It turns from ocean navigation to piloting, between islands.
Right. And so how is it doing navigation here in an ocean where you've never been before?
Well, the nighttime sky is the same. I mean, basically St. John's is almost the same latitude as South Point on the Big Island of Hawaii. So we're basically sailing in familiar waters, the tropics. You know, it's the same night sky. It's the same wind from the same direction. So it's the same. It's just a new environment, a new ocean. But basically all the ocean is one, yeah? All the ocean is one, so... like I said, we left Hawaii in May of 2014, and we've been sailing. We're heading back to U.S. territory now, and this is the U.S. territory, and it feels very comfortable and very feel like you know you're at home again.
So in the whole voyage, so tell me what legs other than the leg from Natal to here have you been captaining for?
Oh, you know, I sailed from Hawaii to Tahiti. Tahiti to the Cook Islands, to Samoa. I sailed around Samoa, then I I think that was like 3 months of sea time, and then I got off for a month, and they took the canoe for some more to the northern town of Waitangi, and I got back on the canoe. I took the canoe down to Auckland, and then I sailed from Auckland all the way down to South Island and back up. And then I got on our second canoe, Hiki Analia, and I brought her back from Auckland to Papeete. Then I flew to Brisbane, and Bruce got off. Yeah, Bruce Blankenfeld got off. I got on, and I sailed the canoe from Brisbane to Darwin. And then I rested for two legs. I rested for the Bali leg and the Mauritius leg. Then I got back on in Mauritius, and I sailed to Mozambique, and then Richards Bay on the east side of South Africa, and sailed all the way to Cape Town. Then I flew home, and then I got back on in Brazil. And now I sail from Brazil to St. John's, and then from St. John's to BVI, and then Cuba and Florida.
And so it's out of all of that time, that's a lot of, that is months and months you're talking about with voyaging. Can you think of like any particular moment that was really stands out for you as the most extraordinary moment of the voyaging you've done on this voyage so far?
I don't know. You know, every trip has got its own personality, it's got its own issues. You know, I really look forward to the crew that I'm tasked to lead, the new individuals. And then I just really aspire to kind of build collaboration and cohesiveness among these people. I tell them, you know, when you come together, we have the beginnings to make a good team, but we're not a good team. We're just a collection of individuals coming together to focus on being successful at one endeavor. Throughout the process of the voyage, we will become a team. And if you just look after each other and you keep working tirelessly and unselfishly towards that end, in the very end of the voyage, it should be rewarding. So, not one leg stands out in my mind. It's just been an accumulation of voyages. And it's been the continuity of one trip and one leg and one crew and another crew and yeah.
Do you ever wake up in the morning and go, wow, I would never ever have imagined that here we would be on the Hokulea in the Caribbean, in Brazil? I mean, does it ever kind of hit you?
Nah, not at all. I mean, you know, the world, as unique as communities are, we're so much alike. We're so much alike. You know, it's every place we've been to, the people have been very, very welcoming. We've had, you know, almost entire trip has been pretty good. You know, may have had one or two bumps along the road, but considering how long this trip is, that's awesome. If the most you can do is complain about one place out of the many places you've been, it's good. It's all good. And every place has been fantastic for us.
How was it going? Did the sail around Cape of Good Hope then?
Yeah.
And so how did that go? That sounded like it was not what it was going to be, what you guys expected.
No, it was everything we expected. We had done years of research on that trip, so we knew it was going to be the most challenging of all the legs. It was a challenge of... It was more an issue of meteorology than it was of navigation. It wasn't a navigational challenge because the coastline of South Africa is right off your starboard side as you're going around. So it was just a matter of understanding the weather systems and timing so that you're only sailing in good weather from port to port. Doesn't matter if you arrive in port during good weather, you don't push on to the next port. You have to have the discipline to say, I need to stop and wait because the weather's going to change. And you don't want to be caught out there with... bad weather. In fact, when we were arriving in Africa, there was a boating accident. Fishing boat went down, 21 crew members had to abandon the ship, 12 of the crew members were lost. In fact, when we arrived in Cape Town, we had the welcoming ceremony on Saturday, and they had all these tents set up on the dock. On the next day, they had the services for the 12 crew members who perished when their fishing boat flipped over. So, South Africa is not a place to take boating without a high degree of seriousness. It's a very, very dangerous community for boaters.
But I mean, I guess it's the thing that sounded surprising was I assumed you would hit weather. Because I just have it in my head that there's always weather there. And it sounds like the weather's not bad going around Cape Cod.
Oh, the weather was bad. Just that we were in port when the weather was bad. We were just very super disciplined about not being out there in bad. Because a canoe cannot take bad weather. I mean, anything like, you know, those raging seas and winds. We would not survive. So it was just a matter of understanding. And this is where technology comes in, right? The assistance of weather satellites and super good forecasting. We had forecasting coming from NOAA. Coming from South African sources, we had local knowledge, and it's understanding all these different resources and pulling them all together in a cohesive, understandable way, and then interpreting that information. And the best knowledge is local knowledge. Guys who boat up and down the community and talking with them, we learned a lot, and it kind of changed our idea of how to get around South Africa.
Yeah, and speaking of that, how often are you able to tap into local knowledge? Have you found outside of the Polynesians that there are very many voyaging cultures still with much intact knowledge?
You know, relatively speaking, like when we pulled into Mozambique, I mean, there is this hundreds of dhows, traditional fishing vessels. These guys, although we didn't have a conversation with them, these guys have been doing this thing for hundreds of years in the same kind of vessels. So, I mean, it's kind of a kindred spirit to, you know, to see a native vessel sailing on the water. But like South Africa, it was basically local mariners, you know, local guys who go up and down the coast that we tapped into, and that was very, very critical. You know, these old salty guys that understood or who's been up and down the coast and knew what weather it would to wait for us guys to leave.
So then I guess this fishing boat wasn't a local fishing boat, the one that
it was a local fishing boat, but you know the fishermen, they're just deckhands, right? They get told by the owner of the boat, you're fishing. You know, the weather changes, it's up to the captain to pull a plug and get in. If the captain wants to wait out, hoping that he can get more fish on and he waits just a little bit too long, then that's what happens, you know. So it's not the fisherman's fault. You know, it's somebody bigger than them that are telling them that. Yeah.
And so if you had one big dream for this whole voyage, I mean, other than the big goal of the overall, you know, the overall mission of the voyage, which it sounds like you've really well kept in hand, but do you feel like there's one thing that you're really hoping for the Hokulea out of all of this?
Well, I think it's about it's about generational learning. It's my hope that at the very end of the voyage, we'll have built the capacity of people that are ready to accept the mantle of leadership and to take the organization forward. That's all we're doing. We're just placeholders. Bruce, myself, Nainoa Thompson. We're just placeholders. We're just setting up the table for the next group of people to come and make their own way. And then if we're successful at what we're doing, then our future will be secure. But there's always a chance that things won't go as planned. But I think we're laying a good foundation. I think this voyage is helping build capacity. It's taken a number of bodies, and I'm pretty impressed with this crew. They're ele'u. Ele'u in Hawaiian means quick learners, very energetic, very responsive. Yeah, they get the job done real quickly. You know, you didn't have to tell people twice to do things. And I basically just kind of manage, but I also let my watch captains and my apprentice navigators run the canoe. And I only step in when I think I need to step in. And then if I'm not, I'm down below sleeping because I expect my officers to lead, yeah? And they want to lead. And, you know, they don't want to be told They want to be able to make decisions on their own. So you got to, in leadership, you've got to be able to be in front, but also most of the time you need to be behind, encouraging and supporting their growth as people.
Yeah. And so what do you think is going to happen once you get to the U.S.? I mean, what are you anticipating? Anything?
Chaos.
What do you mean?
I think East Coast is going to be extremely busy. There are going to be demands on us guys that I hope doesn't compromise the voyage. I just think, you know, there's just so much. That Hokulea is coming to town and all the fanfare and stuff like that. I think we need to maintain an even keel and keep perspective of the voyage and understand the mission and communicate the mission well. And we just need to be true to the intent of the voyage. You know, because if New York City, I mean, come on, can be wild down there. And a lot of people want the attention of connecting with the canoe. And so we just need to be, we need to protect our side of the voyage. We need to embrace the communities we're going to meet, but we also need to manage the voyage and be true to our mission.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now, answer for me a question that's probably that's a really important question that is a kind of irritating one. Why bother? Why bother taking this Hawaiian canoe?
Well, you know,
all the money, spending all the money, getting all the spending all the time. Why bother doing this?
You know why? Because a number of years ago, a couple of us, me and Chad Paishan, were in Japan and we're on a dock and we're talking about what next. You know, we've sailed around the Pacific Rim, we sailed through all the Pacific, and you know, what's the next big challenge? And we just said, hey, we should just stick the canoe around the world. And then and other people had also mentioned that the same thing, you should really take the canoe around the world. And it's, I'm not sure if it's, you know, we have an agenda, a program that we need to fulfill, but really I think it's about whatever the next big challenge is that you want to accept. And we are a people who are constantly challenging ourselves to learn more, to be better, to elevate the bar. So so why spend all that money? It's only money, you know. In fact, we didn't have, I don't even know if we have the money to finish the voyage. But, I told him, we kept postponing the voyage. And, you know, Bruce and I just said, you're never going to be 100% ready. You need this, you need that. Hey, we just go. And we just do it, man. And then the money will come. But let's just get it cranked up and start sailing this canoe around the world. And so it's a leap of faith that the leadership has to have. I mean, I know it's the front face of this organization. He's the person that's selling the voyage to all the big sponsors and donors. I mean, me and Bruce, we got the gravy train job. We just get on the canoe. We have a crew. They provide us with all the food. All we do is tell the boys what to do, when to open the sails, when to close the sails, how to come into a dock, how to get off the dock. We got it. I've got it good in this. Don't feel sorry for me, because I got the plus job. I get, you know, I'm being paid by the University of Hawaii. I get to stay on the canoe. Only thing that's pretty tough for me is that I'm away from my family quite a bit.
Yeah,
my wife just asked me, when the hell are you coming home?
So when are you going home?
End of March. I'll be home end of March.
And so, what do you want people to know about Hawaii? Like, when you're going around the world, I'm assuming you're kind of like ambassadors, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I would hope that they would learn about Hawaii by learning about who I am as a person. Kind of unique individual that has a great perspective of life. I'd like to share a little bit about himself. I don't know what kind of word to use. Maybe aloha describes that kind of general feeling that we're trying to portray. But just learn about the uniqueness of the people of Hawaii. We're listeners, a shoulder you can lean on. Tell us your story more than we want to tell our story.
Yeah. Yeah, but do you feel like you're able to set much of an example? I mean, when you go to places like Mozambique and South Africa, I mean,
just by being generally humble, you know, not being standoffish and not being arrogant and just being respectful of people, I think that's the most important thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And do you feel like you've inspired other people to try?
I'm not sure. Hopefully that they've been inspired.
Nice. Okay. Well, is there anything else that I haven't asked you about that you're thinking that's something?
No, you can always come back and ask me before Tuesday.
Oh, likewise. If there's anything else you feel like, man, you gotta make sure to.
No, I'm good. I'm all good.
Okay.
Right?
Well, good. Then we're all good. And I appreciate your time very much.
Okay.
Thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
Yeah. Okay, I just need like 45 seconds of us sitting here without talking.